He awoke in the uncertain light of dawn. Fenn was sitting over him anxiously. "I thought you were dead," she exclaimed, as he opened his eyes. "So did I," Taita sat up. "Let me see your leg." He unwrapped the bandage and found the wound only slightly inflamed, but no hotter than his own hand. He leant close and sniffed at the stitches. There were no putrescent odours. "You must get dressed. We may have to move quickly." While he helped her into her tunic and loincloth, he told her, "I am going to make a crutch for you, but you will have little opportunity to learn to use it. The Basmara will certainly attack again at sunrise." Quickly, he fashioned it from a light staff and a carved crosspiece, which he padded with bark cloth. She leant on it heavily as he helped her hobble out to the horse lines. Between them, they put the bridle and saddle on Whirlwind. There was a warning shout from the outer stockade. "Stay with Whirlwind," Taita told her. "I will come back to find you." He hurried to the stockade, where Merrin was waiting for him. "Fenn, how is she?" were his first words. "She will be able to ride and is waiting with the horses," Taita told him. "What is happening here?" Merrin pointed across the open ground. 200 paces away, the Basmara regiments were mustering at the edge of the forest. "So few," Taita observed. "Half as many as there were last evening." "Look to the south wall," Merrin told him. Taita swiveled around to gaze in the direction of the Great Lake. "So, they are doing what they should have done yesterday," he remarked dryly. "They will make a double-pronged assault." He pondered a moment, then asked, "How many men are fit enough to hold a weapon this morning?" 3 died during the night, and 4 of our troopers took their Shilluk whores and brats and deserted in the darkness. I doubt they will get far before the Basmara find them. That leaves 16 of us, including Nakontu, Imbali, and her tribe sister, Auka. "We have 15 horses strong enough to carry a man and his baggage," Taita said. "Do we stand to meet another Basmara charge, or set fire to the outer stockade and try to escape on the horses in the smoke?" Taita did not take long to decide. "To stay here will only delay the inevitable," he said. "We will take our chance on the horses and make a run for it. Warn the men of what we intend." Merrin went down the line with the order and returned swiftly. "They all know what to do, Magus. The fire pots are ready. The dice of hazard are in the cup and ready for the throw." Taita was silent, watching the enemy regiments. They heard the familiar war chant begin, the drumming of the shields and the stamp of hundreds of bare feet. "They are coming," said Merrin softly. "Fire the stockade," Taita ordered. The men at the piles of dry kindling dashed onto them the smouldering contents of the fire pots and fanned them with their sleeping mats. The flames leapt up instantly. "Fall back," Merrin bellowed, and the survivors jumped down from the burning parapet. Some ran while others hobbled or limped, supporting each other painfully. Watching them go, Taita felt suddenly tired, frail, and old. Was it all to end here in this remote wild corner of the earth? Was so much endeavour, suffering, and death to be of no consequence? Merrin was watching him. He straightened his shoulders and stood to his full height. He could not falter now. He had his duty to Merrin and the remaining men, but even more so to Fenn. "It is time to go, Magus," Merrin said gently, and took his arm to help him down the ladder. By the time they reached the horses, the entire length of the outer stockade was enveloped in a roaring, leaping wall of flame. They shrank away from the fierce, blistering heat. The troopers led out the horses. Merrin went down the column, assigning the mounts. Of course, Fenn would ride Whirlwind and take Imbali on her stirrup to guard her. Taita would have Windsmoke, with Nakontu hanging onto his stirrup ropes. Merrin would be on his bay with Auka covering his blind side. All the other troopers would ride their own mounts. Now that no mules were left alive, the 2 spare horses were loaded with food and baggage. Hilto and Shabako took them on lead reins. Under cover of the flaming stockade, they mounted, facing the outer gateway. Taita raised high the golden periapt of Lostris and cast the spell of concealment over them, shielding them from the eyes of the enemy. He was well aware of the difficulty in cloaking such a large group of horses and men, but the primitive Basmara would be readily susceptible to the illusions he wove. The Basmara made no effort to break through the burning stockade. Evidently they believed that their victims were trapped within and were waiting their chance to finish them. They were chanting and shouting on the far side of the blaze. Taita waited until the flames had burnt through the outer gates and sent them crashing to earth. "Now!" he ordered. Habari and Shabako galloped into the smoke and threw loops of rope over the fallen gates. Before the fire could burn through the ropes, they dragged them aside. Now the way was open, and the two men galloped back to the others. "Keep together. The closer the better, and follow me," Taita said. The spell's efficacy would be revealed once they were through the gates and out on the open ground beyond. The gateway was framed with fire, and they had to get through quickly before they were roasted alive. "Forward at the gallop," Taita ordered quietly, but he used the voice of power, which carried clearly to every man in the line. They charged to the flaming gate. The heat struck them like a wall, and some of the horses balked, but their riders forced them on with spurs and whips, the heat singeing coats and manes. It scorched the men's faces too, and stung their eyes before, still in a tight group, they were on open ground. Basmara were prancing and howling all around them. Although some looked at them, their eyes passed blankly over them, then lifted to the top of the burning stockade. Taita's spell was holding. "Quietly, slowly," Taita warned. "Keep close together. Make no sudden movement." He kept the periapt held high. Beside him, Fen followed his example. She lifted her own gold talisman, and her lips moved as she recited the words he had taught her. She was assisting Taita, reinforcing the spell. They moved across the open ground until they were almost clear. The edge of the forest was less than 200 paces ahead, and still their presence had not been detected by the tribesmen. Then Taita felt a cold draught on the back of his neck. Beside him, Fen gasped and dropped her talisman on its chain. "It burnt me!" she exclaimed, and stared at the red mark on her fingertips. Then she turned with a stricken expression to Taita. "Something is breaking our spell." She was right. Taita felt it tear and shred like a perished sail in a blast of wind. They were being stripped of their concealing cloak. Another influence was working on them, and he could not deflect or divert it. "Forward at the gallop!" he shouted, and the horses headed for the edge of the forest. A great shout went up from the Basmara legions. Every painted face turned in their direction, every eye lit with bloodlust. They swarmed towards the little band of riders from every quarter of the field. "Run!" Taita urged Windsmoke, but she was carrying two big men. Everything seemed to happen with dreamlike slowness. Although they were pulling ahead of the warriors that followed them, another formation of spearmen was running in from the right flank. "Come on, fast as you can," Taita urged. He saw that Basma was leading the race to cut them off. He bounded across their front with his spear balanced on his right shoulder, ready for a clean throw. His men were baying like hounds on a hot scent. "Come on," Taita yelled. He judged the angles and speeds. "We're going to get through." Basma made the same calculation as the band of horsemen swept past him 30 paces clear. Basma used the impetus of his run and the strength of his frustration to hurl a spear after them. He launched it high, and it dropped towards Merin's heavily laden bay gelding. "Merin!" Taita shouted a warning, but the spear was in his blind spot. It struck his mount just behind the saddle, hitting the spine. The bay's back legs collapsed. Merin and Auka were thrown into a tangle on the scorched earth. The Basmara, who had been about to abandon the chase, took heart and rushed forward, led by their chief. Merin rolled to his feet and saw the faces of the other horsemen looking back at him as they were carried away by their own mounts. "Go on!" he shouted. "Save yourselves! You cannot save us!" The Basmara were closing round him swiftly. Fen touched Whirlwind's neck and called to him. "Whoa! Whirlwind, whoa!" The grey colt turned like a swallow in mid-flight. And before any of them realized what had happened, Fen was racing back to where Merin stood with Auka. For a moment he was too astonished to speak as he saw Fen tearing back towards him with Imbali hanging on to her stirrup and brandishing her axe. He tried to wave her back. "Go away!" But as soon as Fen had turned, so had Taita in the same suicidal gesture. The rest of the band was thrown into confusion. The horses reared and plunged, bumping into each other and milling about until the riders had them under control. Then they all raced back. Now the nearest Basmara, led by their chief, were almost upon them. They hurled spears as they closed in. First Hilto's horse, then Shabako's, were hit and fell heavily, throwing the men from their backs as they went down. With a quick glance, Taita assessed their changed circumstances. There were no longer enough horses to carry them all away. "Form the defensive circle," he shouted. "We must stand and fight them here." The men who had been thrown struggled to their feet and limped towards him. Those on unwounded mounts jumped down and pulled them into the centre of the circle. The archers unslung their bows. Imbali and Auka hefted their axes. They faced outwards. When they looked upon the massed formations of spearmen rushing to attack them, they were in no doubt as to the final outcome. "This is the last fight. Give them something to remember us by," Meron shouted joyfully, and they met the first rush of Basmara head-on. They fought with the ferocity and abandon of despair. They pushed back the attackers, but Chief Basma rallied them, leaping and screeching, and they came back again with him at the head of the charge. He went for Nakontu and ducked under his guard and hit him in the thigh. Imbali was beside him, and when she saw his blood springing from the wound, she flew at Basma like a lioness protecting her mate. He turned to defend himself and lifted his spear to deflect the sweep of the axe. Imbali's blow sheared the shaft as though it were a papyrus reed and went on to thump into Basma's right shoulder. He staggered back, his half-severed arm hanging at his side. Imbali jerked the blade free and struck again, this time for the head. The blade cut cleanly through the crown of flamingo feathers and went on to split Basma's skull to his teeth. For a moment the divided eyes squinted at each other round the blade. Then Imbali levered it free. The metal grated harshly against the bone as it came away, yellow brain matter oozing after it. The Basmara saw their chief struck down, and with a despairing shout drew back. The fighting had been hard. They had suffered heavy losses. Corpses lay thickly around the little circle. The Egyptians were few, but they hesitated to rush in and end it. Taita took advantage of the pause to bolster their position. He forced the horses to lie flat, a trick that all cavalry mounts were taught. Their bodies offered some protection from the javelins of the Basmara. He placed his archers behind them and held Imbali, Auka, and Fen with him in the centre, then took his own position at Fen's side. He would be with her at the end, just as he had been in the other life. This time, though, he was determined to make it quicker and easier for her. He looked at the others in the circle. Khabari, Shofa, and the last two troopers were all dead. Shabako and Hilto were still on their feet, but had been wounded. They had not bothered to treat their injuries, had merely staunched the bleeding by slapping a handful of dirt over it. Beyond them, Imbali was kneeling to bind up Nakontu's thigh. When she finished, she looked up at him with an expression in her eyes that was much more woman than warrior. Meron had fallen on his face when his horse threw him. His cheek was grazed and his ruined eye was bleeding again. A tiny trickle of blood ran out from under the leather patch down the side of his nose and onto his upper lip. He licked it away as he stropped the wetting stone down the blade of his sword. Surrounded by the dense ranks of the enemy, wounded and broken as they were, there was nothing heroic about any of them. "If by some miracle I should survive this day, I will write of them a battle poem that will flood the eyes of all who hear it," Taita promised himself grimly. A single voice broke the silence with a high-pitched challenge. "Are we old women, or are we fighting impis of the Basmara?" The multitudes began again to hum, sway, and stamped. Another voice called an answer to the first question. "We are men, and we have come for the killing." "Kill! Bring the spear! Use the spear! Kill!" The chant went up, and the ranks came forward, dancing and stamping. Imbali stood beside Nkontu, a thin, cruel smile on her lips. Hilto and Shabako smoothed back their hair and replaced their helmets. Meron wiped the blood off his lips and blinked his good eye to clear and sharpen his vision. Then he slipped his sword into its scabbard, picked up his bow, and leant upon it as he watched the enemy close in. Fen came stiffly to her feet, favouring her wounded leg. She took Taita's hand. "Don't be afraid, little one," he told her. "I am not afraid," she said. "But I wish you had taught me to draw a bow. I could have been more used to you now." The ivory whistles squealed and the hordes poured down upon them. The little knot of defenders loosed a flight of arrows into them and another, then knocked and shot as fast as they could draw. But they were so few that they caused barely a ripple in the waves of prancing black bodies. The Basmara broke into the circle, and it was hand to hand again. Shabako was hit in the throat and spouted blood like a harpooned whale as he died. The frail circle broke up under the rush of bodies. Imbali and Nkontu stood back to back as they hacked and thrust. Iuka fell dead. Meron gave ground until he and Taita had Fen between them. They might fight on a little longer, but Taita knew that soon he must give mercy to Fen. He would follow her swiftly, and they would remain united. Meron killed a man with a straight thrust through the heart, while at the same moment Taita struck down the man beside him. Meron glanced at him. "It is time, Magus, but I will do it for you if you wish," he croaked, through a throat rough with thirst and dust. Taita knew how Meron had come to love Fen and how much it would cost him to kill her. "Nay, good Meron, though I thank you for it, the duty is mine." Taita looked down at Fen fondly. "Kiss Meron farewell, my sweet, for he is your true friend." She did so, then turned trustingly to Taita. She bowed her head and closed her eyes. Taita was glad of that. He could never have done it while those green eyes were upon him. He raised his sword, but checked the stroke before it was launched. The war chant of the Basmara had changed to a great moan of despair and terror. Their ranks broke and scattered like a shoal of sardines before a wolf-fanged barracuda. The little group were left standing bewildered in the circle. They were bathed in their own sweat and blood and that of their enemies. They looked at each other with incomprehension, unable to understand why they were still alive. The field was almost obscured by the clouds of dust kicked up by feet and hooves, while thick eddies of smoke drifted down from the burning stockade. It was barely possible to see the tree line. "Horses," gritted Meron. "I hear hooves." "You imagine it," said Taita as hoarsely. "It is not possible." "No, Meron is right," piped up Fen, and pointed towards the trees. "Horses!" Taita blinked in the dust and smoke, but he could not see clearly. His vision was blurred and dull. He wiped his eyes on his sleeve, then stared again. "Cavalry," he muttered in disbelief. "Egyptian cavalry," Meron whooped. "Crack troops! A blue pennant flying over them!" The cavalry charged through the Basmara lines, taking them on the lance, then wheeling back to finish the work with the sword. The Basmara threw down their weapons and fled in disarray. "It cannot be," Taita muttered. "We are 2,000 leagues from our very Egypt. How come these men to this place? It is not possible." "Well, I believe my eyes, or should I say my one good eye," cried Meron gaily. "These are our countrymen." Within minutes, the only Basmara remaining on the field were either dead or soon to be so. The guardsmen were trotting back, leaning from the saddle, to lance the wounded where they lay. A trio of high-ranking officers detached themselves from the main body of cavalry and cantered towards the small party of survivors. "The senior officer is a colonel of the blue," Taita said. "He wears the gold merit and the cross of the Red Road Brotherhood," Meron said. "He is a warrior indeed." The colonel pulled up in front of Taita and raised his right hand in salute. "I fear that we might be too late," exulted Magus, "but I see that you are in good health still, and I thank all the gods for that mercy." "You know me?" Taita was further astonished. "All the world knows Taita of Galala. However, I met you at the court of Queen Mintaka after the defeat of the false pharaoh, but that was many years ago when I was a mere ensign. No wonder it has slipped from your memory. Tenat? Colonel Tenat Ankut? Taita resurrected a memory of the man's face. The colonel smiled with gratification. You honour me with your recognition. Tenat Ankut was a handsome man, with strong, intelligent features and a level gaze. Taita viewed him through the inner eye and saw no taint or defect in his aura, although a sombre blue flicker in its depths betokened some deep emotional disturbance. He knew at once that Tenat was not a contented man. "We had news of you when we passed through Fort Adari," Taita told him, "but the men you left there thought you had perished in the wilderness." "As you can see, Magus, they were mistaken." Tenat did not smile. "But we must leave this place. My scouts have descried many thousands more of these savages converging upon us here. I have done what I was sent to do, which was to take you under protection. We must waste no time, but leave at once." "Where will you take us, Colonel Tenat? How did you know that we were here and in need of aid? Who sent you to rescue us?" Taita demanded. "Your questions will be answered in due course, Magus, but I regret not by me. I leave Captain Onka here to care for your other needs." He saluted again and turned his horse away. They got the horses up. Most had been wounded, two so gravely that they had to be destroyed. But Windsmoke and Whirlwind had come through unscathed. Although they had little baggage remaining, Taita's medical equipment was heavy and bulky. They did not have enough baggage animals to carry it all, so Captain Onka called for more pack horses, and Taita tended the injuries and wounds of his band and their mounts. Onka was impatient, but the work could not be hurried, and it was some time before they were ready to ride out.